Can you make wonder? Create it deliberately? You decide. After listening to Anne Strangechamp's talk with internationally acclaimed artist Janet Cardiff about her sound art.
Well, Janet, I wanted to begin by asking you if you would walk us in to your 40-part motet, kind of be our virtual guide.
Well, quite often when you're walking into the piece of the motet, you start hearing the singers before you even enter the space. And so you're wondering, what is there? There's a choir in this room. When you walk into the room, there's stands with 40 speakers set up in an oval around the space. And as you walk up to one of them, each one is a separate singer. So you really get a sense that that speaker somehow has the spirit or the ghost of this particular singer. You know, the anthropomorphic sense of that speaker is an absent person. The 40-part motet is what I call a reworking of Thomas Tallis's Spem and Allium, which was a piece of music written in about 1573. It's an incredible 40-part harmony piece. And when I heard it on, just a two-track system, I thought immediately that, oh, wouldn't this be beautiful as 40 different separate speakers? So a lot of technical innovation afterwards by my partner, George Burzmiller, and I, and we recorded a choir in England. We finally got the system played back onto 40 separate speakers. And it's quite fascinating to watch people because they sort of walk in quickly and all of a sudden they go into slow motion and their faces have this sense of, oh my goodness, what is this? And then they slowly walk into the center of the oval and they stand there. And then you hear the breath of the first choir going, and then they start with Spem and Allium.
Gorgeous music to begin with, but the experience must be like being in the middle of Renaissance polyphony on steroids.
For me, it was a kind of interesting piece to do because I was very interested in having this up-to-date technology playing back a 16th century piece of music. You can follow the music as it goes from one choir to another and to another. You could hear it moving around in a sculptural way. I just love the feeling of sound coming from one side, then another, crosses over you to another, and so all those sound waves hitting your body. It's quite an effect.
People must cry.
Yeah, it's an interesting effect because you see people and they do burst out crying, and they sit there maybe for two versions through. And I remember watching a three-year-old conduct them, the whole choir, that which was wonderful too. And people lie on the floor. There might be 20 people in this space, but they're all staring into somewhere, whether it's an interior space in their minds.
We're talking about wonder in this hour. Mm-hmm. Your work in this piece in particular seems to me to be all about creating an experience of wonder. Is that something you think about consciously when you're creating a piece?
I think wonderment in our work is something that we really concentrate because we love to experience it. And we make work so that we can feel it. And so many of our pieces have this sense, whether it's through trickery of technology or playfulness, it gives you a sense of, wow, how did they do that? Or all of a sudden you realize that you're in one space in your mind and in physical reality, you're all in different spaces and your mind kind of goes through this point where it can't concentrate. And so it goes into a state of wonderment, I think. And that is very important to me because I'm almost political in my views that the art that I want to create should be transcendent.
Is there something contradictory about setting out deliberately to try to manufacture wonder or an experience of wonder? Because I think of the experience of wonder as a kind of cosmic gift.
Well, I think there's so many different definitions of wonder, right? If it's the wonder that you get when you watch a magician, that's wonderment. But it's also, I was just in the Prado Museum in Madrid and looking at the paradise of earthly delights by Hieronymus Bosch. And people were all standing around just going, how did someone create this world? So I think artists deliberately do that because we enjoy it. And I don't think wonderment, it comes naturally in the physical world, of course, but I think it's quite fine if it's manufactured.
We should talk about some of your other pieces. I mean, you've become really well known for the audio walks you've created all over the world. Will you tell me about the one in London's East End?
There's always kind of a bit of a narrative behind some of the audio walks. And the narrative behind this is that this woman is invisible and lost in London. She's walking around, but she's listening to a tape recording she did herself from years ago. But you also hear the character, the woman, which is my voice, giving you instructions as you move around, and she's listening to her past voice.
You can see the church steeple, scaffolding, graffiti on the wall, barbed wire, broken windows.
But then you start embroidering. You know, new stories come up, things happen, and after a while, honestly, I was just sitting in my office listening to this, and I got this strange feeling that I wasn't entirely sure where I was.
Yeah. I think people get very much in a trance when they do the pieces. And the reason I try to have them at the right place at the right time is that things sync up. Like I'll say, there's a lime green car parked across the street. And I knew that was a painter, Chris Ophelia's apartment right there. And I knew he has a lime green car, and it was quite often there. So then when people were doing it, Chris told me later, he'd looked out the window and he'd see people stop, and just the look on their face was like, oh my God, how'd that car be there? And she knows it's there, and this is the past. So I'm manufacturing these kinds of synchronicities. I see them as how you put poetry together. You put images of sound.
I'm curious about, you know, out of all of the media you can use, and you trained as a visual artist first, you use sound. Why is that? I mean, do you feel like sound takes us places, offers us something that the other senses don't?
Well, definitely. When I started working with sound, I just felt like, yes, it felt just right. You can still work with visuals. You create the visuals in the people's brains. For me, it's a medium that can go into people's minds in a way that is non-intellectual.
I imagine viewers must respond very differently. And of course, your work has been seen in many different countries. You've got installations up in Sweden and Brazil and Canada, all over the place. Do you find that people respond differently? You know, some people are readier to play.
I definitely do. It's interesting you say that because we've had a lot of success in Germany. And Germans have a huge sense of curiosity. I think curiosity in the viewers, in the audience, is very important. We found that some pieces don't go over in America because there's such a short attention span. People, when they go to museums, sometimes want the answer right away, or they want something right away. They don't want to wait 20 minutes for a piece to unfold itself and then have to think about it. Whereas a lot more, I think in Europe, people are much more open to that. And I shouldn't say that generally because we've had lots of work in America and the Americas. It's all been pretty successful. But I do notice when we have shows and there's New Yorkers coming in, you know, they're texting while they're listening to 40-part motet or something.
That's a challenge to the magician in you. You're just going to have to try harder to stun us.
This video will be an experiment. We're like those prisoners stuck in Plato's cave. We watch the flickering shadows on the screen. Try to align your movements with mine. Move your screen up to the left as I do.
Janet Cardiff is an installation sound and video artist. You can hear her uncut conversation with Anne Strangechamps on our website. That's ttbook.org.